Welcome to today's audiocast from Aviation International News, the most respected source for business aviation news.
This is AIN News Editor Chad Trumpeter on site at the Paris Air Show. On Monday at the Paris Air Show, Hyperbop took the wraps off a 20-seat Mach 3.6 business jet that would fly from Paris to New York in just under 2 hours. Key enabling technologies for the Sonic Star include the Sonic Loop S MagJet 5-stage electric turbine hybrid supersonic 4000X series engine and a magnetic spike on the nose that can control sonic booms using plasma waves. AIN sat down with company chairman and CEO Richard Lugg in Paris to get further information about the futuristic aircraft. It begins by giving more details about the unique mag spike.
You can just charge a field, an electric field, and you can ionize within a certain area, arena, around a vehicle. You can ionize the air. You can discharge and you can ionize the air. So, in fact, you're creating a plasma, if you will. And you can control it, done smartly, you can control it and do it in a particular area where you can affect pressure. You can affect the pressure gradient, right? Of the vehicle traveling through the air. And it's a known science, really. I mean, it's probably been looked at for 40 years. 40 years. By famous institutes, engineering establishments, aerospace companies.
So there's no... Has it been... Has it gone beyond the research lab?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's been demonstrated. But what has not ever been possible has been the power source to do it. So... You know, Hypermach, we have the critical enabling technology to make it a reality.
How does the engine produce so much electricity? Is superconducting magnets or?
Yeah, so we have a fully integrated superconducting electromagnet system, which is part of the power turbine. The power turbine is the superconducting electromagnets, and the superconducting electromagnets are the power turbine and producing the thrust all at the same time.
But is the engine along the lines of a convention turbine, or
it is an axial flow turbine, but the design and architecture of the engine is entirely different than what you would see in details if you tore apart a traditional gas turbine, or you tore apart a supersonic engine like the EJ200 flies the Dassault Rafale. The technologies we're using on the architecture all the way down to the aerodynamic flow and the airfoils are quite different because what's the best way to describe it? It's an exoskeleton architecture, meaning that the interior is empty. We don't have any drive spools, or we don't have a shaft in the engine, and we repulse all our turbine machinery electrically. Right? So we generate large quantities of power in a 5-stage turbine, and then we power the compressor and the bypass fan electrically, and we still have large amounts of power left over to address the issues of sonic boom and drag and those kinds of anomalies, those issues for supersonic flight.
Besides the magnetic spike, is there any other use of magnetic on the airplane to play with airflows?
There is, but I don't feel at really liberty to talk in any detail about it, but we've been working on plasma discharge and the management of high power plasmas for 3 years. So, and the whole piece on the engine design, we're almost a full 7 years in there. So we really cut our teeth on the engine architecture, and what would be considered a true hybrid is it's a single piece of machinery that's half electric, half jet. Right. And the critical technology is because of that you can segment the engine, meaning that every single stage of the bypass fan, the compressor, and the turbine is independent from each other. So for the first time, you can truly optimize the engine performance. So we don't have an off-design condition in our engine. It's not inefficient at Mach 0.7 and efficient at Mach 3.5. It's efficient at 0.7 on approach, on the runway, at 3, at 3.5, through the whole flight condition. And it's really a first. I mean, we look at it as a pretty groundbreaking approach to propulsion.
Now you plan on flying the airplane in 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
When do you plan on flying the engine, or at least testing the engine?
We already have a representative piece of turbo machinery hardware operating now in the United States. And that's been... operating for almost, on and off for almost 2 years, and we build the first piece of full-scale turbomachinery hardware next year. And we take a systems-level approach, you know, kind of component. We'll be operating the entire engine in rig tests. We're looking at 5 years out from now.
How would you test something like that if it's not already on the SonicStar itself? I mean, would you try to put it on the military aircraft first?
Yeah, we're looking at various methods and opportunities to do that. You know, so we're literally creating a flying test bed ahead of a launch of a brand new aircraft. Yeah.
Is there any military interest in this engine?
There is definitely. Yeah. We actually the engine technology really started there with some opportunities and work with the State Department, the U.S. State Department, and that was 6 years ago, and we did some work with a big engine company on the very front end. Really before it was engine propulsion, it was really more in the area of propulsion for unmanned vehicles, because we've spent fair amount of time early on in the company unmanned systems, and it's interesting that we're going to be using some of that experience and expertise in the development program for SonicStar.
Now, as far as the engine company, the Sonic Blue, how well funded is that? Is the engine side pretty well funded already?
Yeah, it was quite challenging in the beginning. In the last couple of years, things have gone very well for us, and we have partners, financiers that we've lined up, and this 2009, end of 2009, 2010 was really tremendous for us. This year's been even better, but affected like most companies were worldwide. I mean, 2008 was a more of a challenging year, and particularly when you're young, you're a young company, startup, and you're just kind of watching everything. And we're in a very good situation on the engine piece. And the thing with the engine is that there's demand and interest beyond, commercial aircraft. But our focus is the launch and the build out of this commercial aircraft and this company.
And how is Hypermach being? What's the funding? Is it still in process?
Yeah, the funding is still in process. I've largely funded the company myself. We've had a lot of interest coming up towards the show internationally. And we actually did, in 2008, we spent time in Asia and the Middle East and did, we call it market intelligence, without having a name. We were very interested to see if just the notion of something that was going to move this, rapidly through the atmosphere from a business market, charter sense. And the response we had from the businessmen and the airlines and the people we spoke to was largely overwhelming. It was very unexpected. But this also was in front of what was the largest, the largest significant global downturn in the economy and business, and particularly the impact in the business aircraft market and commercial airline market. So that's we see that turning now. So that's a good thing for all of us in the business. So,
is there any exotic materials in the aircraft itself, or is it composite? Is it aluminum, or is it titanium? Or
we're looking at all of that on the design process. We've our team has experience in some of the more of the exotic aircraft programs that have been done and flown, and some that are completed in the last 30 years. Most of the exotics we're looking at is more on the engine than the propulsion side. It's not to say all the materials and the science exist. We haven't completely put the package together, but certainly we would have more titanium structure in the airframe than a traditional aircraft, or something that's just might be supersonic but not fly at the kind of speeds that we're going to be looking at operating at. So, and then certainly composite. One is always concerned with total weight compared to fuel weight and that ratio. So,
is the design scalable? I mean,
it is.
So is this just a start?
with a business jet?
I don't know. We've actually been contacted by a couple of different organizations. I'm really getting into it. That have asked us, could we scale and go to 100, 90? And we've looked at some metrics and we've looked at scaling and sizing on the Sonic Star, and it's totally doable.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. Now, so you're kind of moving the company over. You're at least moving the engine company over to Europe, and you're potentially going to move Hypermach over there as well. Would you look to? You were talking about partners. Would you look towards European partners to build the aircraft, such as EADS or Fokker, Saab, something like that?
Not necessarily those companies, but certainly those types of companies that are very well known. They're very well established, and that is the plan. Is that we're quite focused on Europe. It's not to say we have solid relations in the United States, but from the standpoint of aerospace and the industry as a whole, we see Europe being a little bit more approachable, a little more innovative in some respects. If we go back 30 or 40 years on the commercial side, I mean, the whole program with Concorde was just tremendous. I mean, that was just, that was a fabulous time for aerospace. And it all happened, in Europe between the UK and France. And then we now see military aircraft programs that are very, very successful. And they're very forward-thinking and advanced technologies. And they're European programs. I mean, that doesn't take anything away from the tremendous interest in it, and we see it as a huge success of JSF. I worked on JSF years ago, but I'm kind of speaking to Typhoon, Eurofighter Typhoon, and Rafael, and then also Saab, the Gripen.
The goal is for first flight in 2021. Would that happen? Do you think that the first flight would happen in Europe, or do you think that would happen in the States, where it's a little more looser as far as aircraft operations go?
We like the idea, the business plan, to have it happen in Europe. We think that the more stringent regulations here on growth and new technologies and the environmental concern is actually a positive thing.
I'm talking like from an aircraft operations standpoint, flight testing.
Yeah, I think that's also a good thing and for us, and we've been looking globally. We've had more of a reception here overseas. It's not to say that we're still working, in the United States, and we have bases there, and we have people there. Some of our team is there, and we have some operations there and engineering capacity there. So I think it's yet to be determined, but we're making a move and focus on Europe. Yeah. So
with a 2021 first flight date, do you think it's possible that we could see this aircraft in service by 2025, or do you think certification will take longer than that just because it's such a new technology?
Yeah, we don't know. We, as a company and management, our technical teams, we're optimistic. We're aggressive. We've done a lot in the last 5-6 years. 2025, certainly that's something to shoot for, but it could be a bit longer. I mean, I think you're looking at a 5-6-7 year certification and get beyond your conforming prototypes and that sort of thing. So,
and how much have you talked to the other companies that are currently developing Mach 1.6, 1.8?
Well, interesting enough, we certainly know of Ariane, and we have relationships with all of their team. I've spent time getting to know them a bit over the years. I think they made their initial launch in 2004. They have a tremendous program, and I think when you're looking at how we travel today, so we travel globally, subsonically. I mean, the future in air transport is supersonics and hypersonics in our lifetime, and I think there's an opportunity for tremendous growth and for many different classes or categories, if you will, for supersonic flight. But it'll always come back to those key issues of addressing, environmental and regulation issues, and then the technologies that can be operational and they can be executed upon and, brought forward into production so you can have a solid business model. I mean, that's really the key. And all of us are, we're all looking at those challenges. We've on purpose set a high mark to achieve because of the metrics we see on the business side, on the economic side.
Do you think you can...
And that we can, you know, so...
Do you think you can make a no-boom aircraft, or where the boom is imperceivable on the ground?
Yeah, I think we could almost get there. I mean, the metrics we're looking at are, yeah, they're very good, very, very good.
That's the hurdle to overland.
It is. Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yeah, so that's a big part of our effort, yeah. Yeah, that's very important.
So,
the engine propulsion side is, the success there is critical to, you know, enabling things like sonic boom reduction, suppression, removal.
Ariane and SAI said that the supersonic aircraft would be in a range of 80 million. Obviously, a faster supersonic aircraft could command more than 80 million. So, talking 100 million for an aircraft?
We do know. We cannot do it for 80 million, and we'll be above 100 million. And I'll kind of leave it at that.
What's the plan over the next year for Hypermach and Sonic Blue?
Well, our programs are running... So we have two development programs, essentially, and they're running parallel. And the engine program is further advanced, of course, than the aircraft. But our plan over the next year, 18 months, maybe even 2 years, is that we will be entering aerodynamic testing, and we'll be kind of finalizing final configuration on the aircraft side. We're pretty much set on the turbomachinery side and the S-Mag jet technology. You know, we're pretty solid on the engine technology. You know, the sizing, all the electromagnetics and the power management system. We probably spent more time in, not so much on the power generation side, but once you have the power, how you manage it. That's one of the biggest kind of science and engineering hurdles, because it's never really been done before. At the power density levels that where we are at, which are enormous compared to where industry is. And we see a tremendous opportunity there in other, you know, applications. And I think some of the challenge is that when you have groundbreaking technology, which is disruptive, you start seeing other opportunities. And the trick is to be really stay focused. You know, that's really, as we all know, and you got to stay on your plan. So we are. So we have aerodynamics. Pretty much, you know, we're very focused on the whole aerodynamic side, both on the high speed and the low speed flight on the aircraft. We have some tremendous people on our team on the science and the engineering and aerodynamic side. We haven't completely decided, but I think there's opportunity that we may be doing a subscale demonstrator. You know, we look at that. There's other very well-known companies that have used that as a baseline for defining flight envelope and data gathering, things like that. And so that might be a consideration in, you know, next 2 to 3 years. But everything seems, you know, we're on track pretty much.
Thank you for listening to today's audiocast from Aviation International News. For the latest business aviation news, go to www.ainonline.com.